Welcome to the Divided Kingdom. This is the evening news program many of you have come to know and trust. As we record this live on Global Star, it's Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. This is Luke Haverly.
And Elizabeth Cabot Haverly.
We're delighted tonight to have a guest, Angeline Marie, to tell us about her crucial new book, Soulless Society, The Ultimate Deception That Took the Land of Plenty to a Nation of Death.
Yes, Lou, Angeline Marie is the host of the program Truth Seekers Radio. She also is the creator of the important radio networks KSTARTalkRadio.com and KingdomStarRadio.com.
So welcome to the program, Angeline.
Hi, how are you tonight?
We're good. It's so nice to have you on.
Thank you so much.
All,
I appreciate you having me.
We both wanted to say that we loved the cover of your book. That was really, really neat. It shows a woman, really the Statue of Liberty, bent over in distress.
Yes, and Angeline, part of that distress, as you have told so well in your book, this distress comes from the contamination, the mixture of good and evil, this mixture that has increasingly beset America. And, you know, even I, Elizabeth, as an 8-year-old child, playing Lady Liberty in a little school play on stage, had no idea whatsoever that French Freemasons, the secret society that openly states they worship Lucifer, gave this statue to America as a gift. And I also, to my shame, even as a teenager in high school who took civics classes, I never realized America is not a democracy, but is a constitutional republic. And shamefully, I entered a Voice of Democracy contest as a high school kid, and I won, and I taped my little essay at the local radio station. But Angeline Marie has a very significant chapter in her new book on how even our top leaders were part of brainwashing us into calling our constitutional republic a democracy. There's so much that is so valuable in this book that Angeline wrote during the COVID years, but we felt that there is one very outstanding chapter. And very soon, Angeline's going to tell you how you can get the book. The whole book is very important, but this one chapter, I thought, was just an eye-opener, what you all need to know, how we have been bamboozled.
Yes, and Angeline, tell us something very interesting in the book, how you first woke up to the truth and found the key patriot items. Would you tell us about that?
Well, that was my doctor's
moment. She found out about Dr. Stan and about John, help me with his name for a moment, Liberty Works Radio Network.
John Cotmere, Liberty Works Radio Network. Yes, I tell the story. This was in 2000 where I had this job at a software company, and I was still, you know, considered young. I was in my mid-30s, and I really knew I was searching for my life's purpose, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it, and I really wasn't interested in news at the time or politics, but I was a reader, I can say that. And so anyway, I took this job at a software company, and I was testing software, and it really became tedious and boring, and I tried to quit the job. And the owner talked me into staying on a little longer, and I agreed to it. And he, because the work was tedious, he would allow his employees to listen to internet radio, you know, as long as we had earbuds on. And I stumbled on Dr. Stan Monteith, and he changed my world. And then also Liberty Works Radio Network, which was John Cotmere, and many, many other, you know, that led to so many other things that opened a door that changed my life. But definitely was Dr. Stan was, he's the one that I really look up to. He really opened my eyes to what was going on, and that everything that we are seeing in the physical physical world is pretty much orchestrated, and it's a spiritual war going on. And so that was the start. And then, you know, a few years later, I think it was, I was thinking about this earlier today, in 2006, I believe I found your program, and I even contacted you and offered my website services, and I think we put a website up for you back then, and I've been with both of you now for quite a few years. And then things went on, and
that,
yeah,
you know, Angeline,
and I've been so blessed by that.
It was just amazing because I think, as you remember, I was one of those people, I guess you call a Luddite. I wanted to live in the past, and I did not want the internet in my home because of Big Brother, so I was really not going to have the internet. And I think one time Dr. Stan said, "Why, you must have a website." But I don't know whether we did then yet, but I think this is at the time we were on Republic Broadcasting, the network, and you got in touch with us. You wrote a little letter, and you said that God had told you that you were to volunteer to build our website. So, you know, your book, your wonderful book, tells how everything is really under the dominion of God to those of us who realize who He is and His remnant, so that God had this plan, how we would have a website. And at various times, you've shown your excellence. It's a beautiful website. And, you know, people can go there to DividedKingdomRadio.com, and there aren't a lot of commercials. Everything that you've done is excellent. Our first website, I think, was TheDividedKingdom.org, something like that. And, of course, forces intervened, and, of course, you got us another website. And so we can see the hand of God helping all of us. And, you know, Lou and I didn't even know that you were writing a book during the COVID years. And here came this wonderful book. And so now, you know, I think Lou's going to ask you to tell the listeners for the first time how they can purchase this book.
Yes, Angeline, do you just go ahead and tell us how someone can get the book?
And name the book again. There.
Yes, Solus Society is the title of the book. Author is Angeline Marie.
And it's called Solus Society, The Ultimate Deception That Took the Land of Plenty to a Nation of Death. And it's funny because when I was coming up with a name for the book, I believe the Lord told me these phrases, the land of plenty to a nation of death, and that's why that's in there, because we became the land of plenty, blessed by God with this country and the, you know, founding fathers' system. But then we became fat and happy and prosperous and materialistic, and now I believe we are at the doorstep of the nation of death. So anyway, listeners can find my book if they're online at SolusSocietyBook.com. That's SolusSocietyBook.com. If you cannot go online for some reason, if you were to walk into, because online it's available on Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and Amazon. However, if you cannot do that, if you can make your way to a Books A Million in your area or a Barnes & Noble and bring them the name of the book, they could order it for you. And then something else that's very important to me is, as I was finishing up and this was going to publishing stage, I really believe that I had to donate half of the proceeds to a nonprofit, and I prayed over that, and I came up with Shatter Ops. And Shatter Ops was started by a Christian man and founder, Russ Dizdar. And what Shatter Ops does is they rescue human trafficking victims, and they also expose the darkness of it, and they heal and rehabilitate the victims. And you can find out more about them at shatterops.org.
Is that Ops, UPS, or OPS?
OPS as in operations, Shatter Operations, so it would be OPS. So shatteropS.org.
I think that sounds very, very worthy.
Right, what I found out, because
I had heard of them, but I didn't know a lot about human trafficking, and I found out that it is the second largest criminal industry worldwide, and it's worth about $150 billion a year, which is disgusting, but that's where it's
at.
Yes,
it is. And we know that Russ Dizdar died a strange death. We have all heard that in the Patriot community. So the people who are really out taking the risks for the Lord to stop this abominable thing with the children, they are in danger. And so we really applaud you for giving profits to them. Well, then I think now Lou is about ready. He has some major questions.
Well, Angeline, I know the entire book is a lot of very, very valuable information. We thought we'd begin with concentrating on, mainly on Chapter 5, which is about Facebook, Hollywood, the media, etc. So let's begin with just a kind of a general question. What does the average person think about Facebook? What's it all about to the average person, do you think?
I think the average person just believes that it's this great communication tool that they can keep in touch with family and friends, and that it's harmless, and you know, that it's this great invention because it in real time you can pretty much post things, send messages, and I think that's just what the average person believes.
Yes.
I don't know if you want me to go into more depth about what I think it is.
I think the questions, as he proceeds down, will guide you. And, you know, I just want to add that in my family, on both my maternal and paternal sides, I hear this all the time. I have cousins, and they're all interacting, and they're all so enthusiastic about providing all the details of their lives, and they put things in the cloud, and they just think that this is just a happy little reunion center. There's never a thought about something that could be collecting and collecting and collecting. Oh, well, Lou, why don't you go to question two?
All right. Angeline, supposedly, according to your book, Mark Zuckerberg and friends developed Facebook as an app for their college. Do you really believe that story?
No, I never. I guess because of what I had learned over the years, and I think that launched in 2006, Facebook did, but I remember when it came out and everybody was running to it, something in my spirit told me, don't even go near that thing. And so I never bought the story that Facebook organically came out of a dorm room by a group of college kids, and then it catches on like wildfire. And they convince everyone to put everything about their life in their pictures and where they're going on vacation. And I thought there was a danger in that. Before I really even delved into the history of it, I had this, you know, I guess it was my spirit telling me stay away from it. So counter to the cover story, I had started to believe it was more of a data mining project and that it was purposely set up to collect and catalog everything about everyone all the time. And yes, I think they use the data and they sell it and they make money off it, but I think as we will see, and probably so now, but I think in time when we're real, I mean, we think we're living in a surveillance society now. I think it's going to get way worse. And I think at that time, we're going to see what they've really been doing with all this information.
Very interesting.
Yes, and that'll bring us up to a little bit later question, too. But in the meantime, have you found any evidence of CIA connections to Facebook and vice versa?
So what I have found, when I was actually looking at Facebook a few years ago when they started Libra, which was their digital currency that they were trying to roll out. And that's really what even got me back into looking at them. And that was during the time of the pandemic when I was writing. But anyway, here's what I did find.
I looked into the CIA aspect of this. What I found was a claim that Tim Hodgson, he had written this article, and he was trying to find the CIA connection. And what he said was that there was a relationship between CIA and Facebook through these board members. So there was a board member named Jim Breyer, and Jim Breyer had this connection through a funding company, and he was involved in their most recent round of funding at the time that I was investigating this. And it led Hodgkinson to a company called Greylock Venture Capital, and he found that through this Breyer connection that Facebook had received $27.5 million. Also, there was another partner at Greylock named Howard Cox, and he was tied through the Greylock connection, but also there was a connection that this Cox was on the board of QTEL, it's the letter Q hyphen T-E-L, which is a venture capital wing of the CIA. So as I go on and I find more ties and research, I see that then Facebook was linked through to the government, but through the Department of Defense. And that you can even find this. Now, they put this out on Wikipedia, which makes me wonder just how legit all this is, but what I'm saying is that the Department of Defense is owning up to this. They're not hiding it because they published it and it's out there. So they had a project, they meaning the Department of Defense, had a project in the early 2000s, and this was just a few years before Facebook was even created, and this project was called LifeLog. And it had been a planned project by DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project, but under the DOD. And DARPA had developed this LifeLog. And so here's the coincidence. And this is what I look for in my research. I always look for these coincidence links because, you know, there's coincidence. But then when you start finding more and more and more, and they become, you know, lots of them, then I have to say, okay, how much of a coincidence was this? So DARPA, even the DARPA Wikipedia page says that they were responsible for the development of this emerging technology for use by the military. So LifeLog, this I think was like, say, the 2003-2004 time period. Now, LifeLog, like I said, was doing what Facebook would later do. However, what happened is I think some representatives and their constituents started to hear about this LifeLog project, and it might be an invasion of privacy. And so all of a sudden, LifeLog in 2004, that project gets shelved because people really started to talk about it and said,
and Angeline, I believe Lou had on a note here from your book that LifeLog was supposed to, quote, become the ultimate tool for profiling potential enemies of the state. That doesn't sound too benign either, does it?
Right. And so then my question in the book is, how do you define the enemies of the state? Now, my opinion as it stands today is I could be an enemy of the state because I don't agree with everything the government does. So if the definition is enemy of state is somebody who doesn't agree with everything, you're all of a sudden a domestic terrorist. So that was my big question.
Right. Who's, I think you should ask question six because this might tie it all together there.
Well, yes, Angeline. How does the proposed LifeLog program compare to the actual Facebook of today?
Well, I never saw the LifeLog, but everything that I read on it, because what it was is a database that would start collecting information, and then they can track Americans' personal info over their whole lifetime. And so this is when the civil libertarians jumped in and they started complaining, and that's why it was shelved. But everything I read about LifeLog, it certainly sounded like the prototype for Facebook. And like
yes,
I said, this enemies of the state thing. So anyway, LifeLog gets canceled, and then here's another coincidence. How is it that Facebook magically appears just within a couple years? And the other thing that I always thought was strange is how it just took off like wildfire. But here we are, you know, just a couple years later, and we have something that's just like LifeLog, and it's rolled out to the public. And here, and then in a short order, I remember when they became a publicly traded company and started making money off of it.
Yeah, so it may serve two purposes for the owners, or, well, I guess the stockholders are the owners, but it serves to make money, but it also serves a more insidious purpose. Isn't that right?
Most definitely. And then some other strange things I found was this woman named Regina Dugan. She was a former head of DARPA in 2016, and so she worked for DARPA, but then she goes on to work for Facebook and Google. So I think something else I believe is that a lot of these social media tech giant people, I think a lot of them have been selected, and then they're given you're going to be commissioned to do this. I don't necessarily think Mark Zuckerberg is who we think he is, and I don't necessarily think that Larry, I think it's Larry Schmidt, if I have his right name, from Google, I don't necessarily buy that. And recently, I could talk about this later, I even found information through this fantastic writer and researcher, Suzanne Bradford, and she talks about Bill Gates and where he really came from. So, I mean, I just think it's all this incestuous thing where these people are approached now by whom? I don't know. Is it government, or does it come even from a higher place? And then they're given this platform, and then all of a sudden it just seems like they become these rich, you know, tech giants.
And they're always connected with some of these sinister agencies like the CIA, like DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And DARPA has done things, I think, on brain chips and various things, all kinds of things. And, of course, we have been reporting on our program for some time about the biological weapons agencies that were in Ukraine and put there by the CIA. Even RFK Jr. testified before Congress with this. You know, we're curious there if you could just very briefly give a little bit of where did Bill Gates come from. He seems to be ruling just about everything on the planet.
Well, okay, so we've looked at Bill Gates as this guy that is from the tech world, and I remember when this wasn't all that long ago that he left the Microsoft board, and then all of a sudden, here he is in pharma. And so a few years ago, I started to wonder, okay, why is this tech guy so concerned about that? And back then, his thing is he's going to vaccinate everybody in Africa and then the world and blah, blah, blah. And so then I stumble onto Suzanne Bradford's work, and she did extensive study on she always looks at who's who, and then she goes back and tries to find their bloodlines and who they're connected to. And if you want to check out, she's got this book called Taking Back America, and it's very good. It reveals a lot about Bill Gates. And, it's Eric Schmidt. I said Larry Schmidt, but it's Eric Schmidt that was Google. So here's what she says. She says that Gates, now, you know, she said he's the seventh cousin of George H.W. Bush, once removed. His father was William Gates Sr., a prominent attorney who served on the board of the United Way of America. His mother was Mary Maxwell Gates. She served on United Way as an executive committee member alongside IBM's CEO at the time, John Opel. In 1980, Opel tapped Microsoft to provide an operating system for IBM PCs, and eventually Microsoft and Intel end up teaming up against IBM, and that led to a long lawsuit that lasted quite a long time. But she goes on and she says, about a year after the antitrust lawsuit was settled, I think that she gave the year about 2005, Queen Elizabeth knighted Gates for his contributions to the enterprise in Britain. And
she also says
that his all of this stuff is linked to Rothschild and Queen Elizabeth. And then there was, I don't know if this was a program or a document. I've yet to find it, but I know you and your audience have heard Silent Weapons and Quiet Wars.
Yes, we have.
And this,
by Deborah Tavar.
This was the, right, and yes. That's where I first heard it. And this is the blueprint to electronically track and trace and regulate everything cradle to grave, you know, and reducing energy consumption and expenditure of energy. And, you know, the least you use the least amount, and everything is, you know, at the lowest level possible. That's how they want us to live. Like in a 200-square-foot pod.
Right. You know, we heard an important interview with Dr. Jane Ruby and Todd Callender. And Todd Callender is an attorney, and he's done some magnificent work in helping military veterans who have been harmed and stymied by the forced COVID vaccines in the military. But he was asked by Dr. Jane Ruby, who really is at the top of all this? And he said if he had to say, he thought it was these three. It was the Rothschilds, the Vatican, and who's the third one, Lou?
The monarchy.
Oh, yes, the monarchy.
Right.
Monarchy.
That's exactly,
he said what
yes.
was left of the queen, but I think maybe he understated King Charles as sort of the real leader of the so-called climate change in the whole world. So this was quite a warning from Todd Callender because, you know, we'd all like to think we have a lot more time to hold back things like the CBDC, the central bank, digital currency, the various things, the WHO, the pandemic treaty, which may put us all under this kind of a terrible medical martial law worldwide with mandatory vaccine shots. So we'd like to think there's a lot more time. And so Dr. Jane Ruby sort of asked Todd Callender whether if we weren't successful now. And Todd was a very strong Christian in this interview. He said everything is under God's control. But he recognizes all the evil, and your book recognizes very, very well that without repentance and change, we will never change. We will never get back our freedoms. But at any rate, what Todd said was, no, Dr. Jane, if we don't win now, there won't be a second chance. Because these things, the AI, everything is developing to such a point that the freedoms are going. They're fleeing much more with the AI, with everything coming. Lou had noted that Facebook and Google collect this data about us every day, and we have the Utah Data Center, a huge place. But I think let's move on to your question 10, Lou. How have social media changed society?
Yes, yes. Angeline, can you tell us a little bit about that?
I just think that it's made people addicted to it. I mean, they're always on the phones, and a lot of that is social media driven. I think attention spans have been limited to almost nothing. I mean, now people can't even sit through, they complain if a video is 2 or 3 minutes. So now they've got the Snapchat business where it's just a few seconds. You know, you have to keep it. In fact, I was, the publisher of my book was trying to get me to do a Facebook and a Twitter and a this and a that. And I said, absolutely not. Not that I'm just against those companies. You know, I did start a Rumble video channel, but that's about the limit of my my social media. I'm not a big social media person. Now, I'm not saying that there can't be some good with it, but I just think you have all these issues with young people suiciding themselves, or, you know, I don't look as good as this one, and then they have no self-confidence. There could be a lot of good, but I think there's also a lot of bad. But the thing, if I step back and I look at the whole picture, and this is something I learned from Susan Bradford, is that these tech lords are fake. They are created to be the front men of these various networks. And when we talk about, I'm talking about like the Googles, the Facebook, the Twitter, possibly Apple, and that these dummy companies that are formed with these tech giants get millions of dollars in initial investments. And then it underwrites to inflate the valuation that turns into billions when these private corporations end up hitting the stock market. And she also said that these fake front men are pseudo-military corporations, which is kind of the connection I saw with the CIA and Facebook and the LifeLog. I mean, that was all military-oriented to begin with. And she said, magically, all these large corporations start making a lot of money. Now, she had ties for Google to the NSA, and then Facebook, she had the NSA and the CIA, and Amazon, she had the NSA and CIA. And then one more thing before I leave Bill Gates. You know, I did a chapter on China, and yeah. I won't go into that. That's a long chapter. But here's something I didn't find out till just recently after I wrote the book, was that Gates was also kind of connected to design these computer and op systems for the CCP. And that they were specifically tailored to meet the censorship requirements of the CCP. So that's something else he was involved in. And that's not recent. I think that might have been, say, like in the 80s or probably 90s time period. But you see, you start looking and you find all these connections from, you know, one place to the next. And it's like I always end up going down these rabbit holes. I don't mean to find all this stuff, but it's like you just start researching and you see all these little connections.
And God has led you to do this. Think what an inauspicious beginning you had there, listening on your little headset and finding Dr. Stan Monteith. You know, we could give a similar journey, how we were just not knowing any of this and led into finding out things. In our case, it was through my distant relative, Al Covett, pretty much, who was an action officer for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And, of course, we learned quite a bit about chemtrails and all of this. But what you're saying, I think, is very important, that most Americans do not want their bread and circuses interrupted. They want to watch their football games. They want to watch their soap operas. They don't want to know that there's an evil military police state that is growing, and it is the one world government. They don't want to know that they're in danger. But the listeners to the Divided Kingdom radio program, and I'm sure on your networks, there are listeners who do want to know the truth. And, you know, I think this front that evil has put up, this evil tyranny, one thing that underlies all of it, probably, I often tell this because I heard it on Alex Jones years ago, documentary maker Aaron Rousseau was talking about the friendship he had for a while with Nick Rockefeller. And he said that Nick Rockefeller said, our goal is to get a brain chip into every human on the planet. And of course, Lou and I have been covering the depopulation efforts of the COVID vaccine. And as you know, Angeline, you mounted all of our radio monologues for the years from 2020, basically, through about 2022 up through 2023. And we felt there was important information there being compiled about COVID and the vaccine. But, you know, we thought we can't get a book. We don't know whether we'll ever get a book. And, you know, sometimes God does things to enable us. We had no idea that during us getting all that, you were busy writing this book. And there we were getting these dialogues and monologues. And I said, you know, if we can't do anything, let's just, you go to Amazon, Lou, and buy us some file folders. So he might have spent $200 with these colorful file folders. And we thought, someday we will get that all typed up. We'll have a book. Well, God had another route. It wasn't all the way we wanted to have it, but we do have a book, too. And we began to write it in July. And there was quite a time there. We were targeted, we think, with a lot of poisonous chemtrails, and the Canada smoke was very bad here. And it really affected my lungs. And then in the middle of that, Lou had a big tooth and gum infection blow up, and God healed it miraculously. So we worked night and day all of July, and we thought we would get this out very quickly. We finished a book, and it's COVID and Coming Chaos, and we will soon have it ready that we can get it out, and we certainly are going to send you a copy. But we marvel at it now. It was very hard, and we had much satanic opposition, but we do have a lot of facts and a lot of things that are important. So you see, there God was leading you, doing your part during the COVID years, writing this. And now that we are at a little stopping point here, we know that we are not going to accomplish anything without God's mercy and power, the same kind of mercy that he gave us with overturning Roe v. Wade. There's no human being who was able to do that. Only God did it. But it's so important that every listener here knows the listener must pray hard constantly for America to repent. And we really must continue here. It's so important, the rest of your chapter, to see how this front has been there in Hollywood. I was really shocked. Lou, why don't you start right there with question 11?
Yes, Angeline. Obviously, Hollywood has a widespread influence on just about all of our lives. How did Hollywood come to be in California?
Okay, I interviewed Jay Dyer, and he has studied, he went to school to study film and media and the history behind it, and that was what he studied in college. Now, most people look at Hollywood and the media as just entertainment, and I don't think they look at it with a critical eye. I know when I was a young person, I never did. It's just what we just think it's passive entertainment, right? I don't think that anymore. In fact, I'm like a person that likes to look up words, and I looked up the etymology of the word entertain, and enter means to come among you, and tain means to hold you. And in my book, I call this whole thing, because it's not even just the entertainment industry. I'm starting to believe, and I know this sounds so tinfoil hat, but I'm starting to believe that almost everything is orchestrated. But I call Hollywood and the media theater diabolique, meaning the devil's stage. And, you know, prime example was COVID. I mean, in 2010, I believe that Rockefeller Foundation document was the script for the COVID theater production. And then in 2019, they did Event 201, and I call that like the rehearsal. And that was on October 18th, 2019. And within 6 weeks, we started to see the first cases in real life, and I call that the real life stage show. So I'm starting to believe that it isn't just Hollywood and entertainment, but I'm starting to believe almost every, and especially anything that you see on television or in the movies or on Netflix. I just think there's an evil, insidious purpose behind most of the garbage that you see on those pay subscription things, because I don't subscribe to any of that, but if I go online to look at something, they'll put these trailers for, and everything is evil. It seems like everything is demonic or satanic, or there's, you know, somebody standing there with blood coming out of their mouth and their eyes look like they're demonic. Why is that? Why
yes,
does everything
it
have
does
to
look
be
demonic.
Like
and
that?
I wasn't sure, Angeline, that I heard you correctly. When you were getting the etymology of entertainment that was entering among you, and then what was the next? Taming us.
Yeah, like holding your attention, holding on to your thoughts, keeping your attention. And if you think about it, that's exactly what Hollywood has done. I mean,
exactly.
I believe Hollywood, after my discussion with Jay Dyer, Hollywood was created as a propaganda tool. They had started to see how it captured the public's attention, and especially in terms of moving their what they would concentrate on. If they put something out in the media, they were able to then move the public's attention over to something else. And think about just the daily news. You know, we could all be worrying about one subject in the morning, and then if all the networks start on some other tragedy by dinner time, all of our focus then changes from, you know, scenario A to scenario B within a few hours, and then it's old news. It's like everything becomes old news so quickly anymore. And I just think
it's talking points. And, you know, one of these key things that was just so shocking to me, let Lou move to question 12. We had no idea about this.
Oh, yes. What was Hollywood's connection to British intelligence?
The origins.
Right. So Jay was telling me that the origin of Hollywood was through, in his book, he wrote a book on this called Esoteric Hollywood, Sex, Cults, and Symbols in Film. Now, he compared it in our interview to ancient Babylon. So he said today's Hollywood is much like ancient Babylon on a political and spiritual level. But he said that basically the British intelligence was commissioned to start putting out films that would push the propaganda of the day. And then, and now this is even, I believe this started even before we had a CIA. This was British intelligence. And then Hollywood was then created. Actually, he said Hollywood was originally going to be in England. And then what happened was they decided that they would move it over to our country. But it was linked to British intelligence. And then eventually, when the CIA became a thing, then they started using the CIA to hire actors and actresses to be in the films, but also they would do double duty. I mean, he had instances where they would meet, say, heads of state or international heads of state, and they would be there to kind of keep them company or whatever, but that they would really be there to spy on these people and to find out things about them. So it really was insidious from the get-go. And this actually started out of the Royal Society groups. He mentioned the Fabian Society and the Tavistock Institute in England, and you know, the early days of films from the 20s and the 30s. It was primarily produced for war propaganda, and he mentioned, like, because I was asking him about, you know, I heard, I don't want to mention any names, but I heard of, like, some present-day stars that are supposedly CIA assets. And he said yes. And he said, actually, there was a direct connection to British intelligence through people like Alfred Hitchcock and Ian Fleming, you know, in the James Bond films, and the writers. The writers are big on this. He mentioned Ian Fleming, Noel Coward, and Will Dow. And so, you know, he said they were instructed to just basically shift and pump out this propaganda to kind of move the public's attention to wherever they wanted to go at the time. So
yes, and I just finished a book. I can't remember the exact title. The word influence is in it, but it's about mainly about William Stevenson, who was a British man who had no real background in spying or anything like that, but he was brought over, headquartered in New York City, just before World War II, and his whole aim was to get the United States into the war, or at the very least to get people in this country to look favorably upon intervening.
And he was British?
Nazis. He was British. And they did all kinds of things, just like what you're describing. And used, now, Ian Fleming was one of the ones who was involved with that very closely, and some other people, General Pershing, who was, you know, one of the great heroes of World War I, was also used by Mr. Stevenson knowingly. It wasn't a, you know, it wasn't a surprise. He knew what he was doing. And they also tried to counteract a lot of the anti-war speeches and so forth of Charles Lindbergh. So this has been going on for quite some time.
You know, you have a point there on your paper there, Lou. You have point 16. The government and intelligence agencies have used Hollywood for their purposes. And do you think Hollywood was organized with this in mind? And Angelina, as you were talking about the beginnings of all this, we would have to wonder, Tavistock and all of the other things and all of these agents, mm-hmm. even George Orwell, I believe, was an MI6 or whatever it was at that time, and he exposed a lot of things with Animal Farm and all the other things. So it looks as though possibly this idea of Britain getting back America or breaking it down. Now, the I guess we have moved to the point at which the New World Order now would not exactly want to have us be taken back into the British Empire. It's the one world government, but still, America is the target. We all see that. A lot of draconian things that are being done to break down the middle class in every way possible, and including even the COVID shots. There were more deaths here than anywhere else. We know that this agenda has been there a long time, but, you know, I really was flabbergasted when I saw in your book that possibly this was the purpose in the beginning of Hollywood. It wasn't to provide recreation and nice movies for all of us. These were the totalitarian aims, and I think this is the satanic plan going way, way, way back. You know, I'm looking here, Lou, over what you had in question 14. Why don't you ask that?
All right. Well, Angeline, what are some of the ways in which the CIA influences public opinion?
Well, I think the biggest way, especially today, is just to step back, they have been involved in big media forever. I mean, in the book I talk about how it went back as early as the Cold War years. Well, I think it's even way earlier than that. But they had William Paley of CBS and the head of Time Inc. and New York Times and, you know, ABC and Hearst and Scripps Howard, Associated Press, UPI, Mutual Broadcasting. So I think what happens, and how high this starts, who knows? You know, you were talking earlier about Vatican and the royal family, and I don't know from where this really starts, because I think that's the top, what you mentioned earlier. But what happens is all these executives that head up these big media agencies, they're giving basically what you said earlier, talking points of the day. They're given the news of the day, and they're told to disseminate it. I'm sure you've seen that video where all the talking heads of all those somebody put together a video of all these local stations that were like ABC and CBS affiliates from across the country, and they were showing this excerpt where all of these stations with all their different anchors are talking in unison. They have the same script. And
exactly.
They were insinuating that this is what happens. All these stations are given the script that they're supposed to go by. And I believe that's what's happening, you know, up until present day.
Point 18, he said from your book, Watergate reporter Carl Bernstein, listed a number of well-known media people who had CIA connections some years ago in a Rolling Stone article, and they included Henry Luce of Time, Arthur Sulzberger of the New York
mm-hmm.
Times, and
mm-hmm.
now he had an interesting question, I think. Why do you think they allowed Bernstein to write about them? I don't know. Do you have any idea on that, why they were allowed to be?
I don't know if I actually asked that question in the book. I'll have to go back and look. But I wondered that myself. Now, there are those that say they're supposed to divulge whatever they're about to do. And they'll tell
us,
Jay Dyer said this a lot, that they do this a lot in movies and TV shows and in media. They will put out there so that you can't say you never knew about it, or you can't
moral code. That was exemplified by The Lone Gunman, the movie that came out before the September 11th New York events. It showed that. And I believe there have been several other instances, but I'm not exactly familiar with it. We were told that was the Illuminati code. That might have been former Satanist Doc Marquis who said that too. You know, we don't want to run out of time without again telling people how they can get your book. Is it also for sale at Amazon?
Yes, it's for sale at Amazon and Barnes & Noble online and Books A Million. And if you just want to start at one place, if they go to SolaceSocietyBook.com, I link out to all those different places where they can buy it.
Repeat that again, Angeline.
It's Solace, SOULLESS, Society, Book, BOOK.com. It's like the one place I have for everything that they can even download a couple chapters free. But if they want to buy it, I link out to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Books A Million online. And like
one more
I said,
time,
if somebody
one
doesn't...
One more time, the title. Let's spell it for them.
Solace, SOULLESS. Society, SOCIETY, Book, BOOK.com. Solace, Society, Book.com.
We want to congratulate you on this marvelous achievement. And, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't say anything about the hope of your final chapter. We just made a little note of a couple questions there, Lou. What's the first one there?
Well, let me see.
If you find that.
It will take me a minute.
And, you know, while you're finding that, I'll talk about one point, because we are really running down to getting close to the edge of the wire. You made such an interesting point about putting on all the weapons of God, all of the weapons we need for the spiritual warfare. And part of it was God's saints praying aloud together. And Lou and I have learned this, that we prayed about a family member in a new way, out loud, and we asked God, we ask Jesus, in the power of his blood, to cast out the devils from this young family member. And it was amazing. In 2 weeks, something turned around completely in that young person's life. It was miraculous. So that we were shown that power, and you're telling us that we must be bold and we must say these things out loud because it goes in God's dimension and our dimension. Isn't that right? The sound of our voice.
Yes, and I got that from Paul McGuire from his book From On High. He talks a lot about that. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that while I was finishing up the book and that prior year. So we're probably 2021. I started wondering about that because think about it. We have the Word of God. We refer to the Word of God as the Bible. We say that the Word is God. And I just think there's something to it. And I started wondering, you know, look at all the evil that's, for instance, witches and warlocks. They know that when they speak spells aloud, there's power to it. But yet Christians don't seem to believe that. I never really thought much about it until the last few years. I think there's something very powerful. It's the Word of God, and it's mentioned in putting on the whole armor in Ephesians 6:10-20, and he even talks about praying, and it talks about aloud. So I think there's something to that, and I thought I might get backlash from some people because they might think I'm trying to mimic, you know, how a witch or a warlock would say something and command it like they're casting a spell. And that's not what I meant at all. I just meant that I think when you pray aloud, there's something to that that puts something in motion. And ironically, that's what Paul McGuire talks about. He talks about it from a spiritual view, yes, but also he talks about it from a scientific view, from a physics view, of when you put out words that something happens to the sound waves. And
we're running out of time, but I think that you have encapsulated the spiritual element of it, that we must have total faith and boldness as we speak aloud. And that's what we discovered in this prayer.
Yes.
Because things began to happen. God respects that. He wants that from all of us, the remnant. This has been a terrific interview. We hope you'll come back again, and we hope that you'll keep writing more things and alert us when you have something you'd like to come back on our program for, Angeline.
So thank you so much.
I appreciate the time.
Well, we appreciate having
yes,
you.
Yes, and we urge our listeners to get the book and to wake up others. Tell them about this program and about your networks. Again, K-Star Talk Radio, Kingdom Star Radio. And thank you, listeners. We hope you will get Angeline Marie's book and profit from it like we did. Good night.